If you're looking for a way to help birds or take your support to the next level, this May, I would love for you to join the Birds Canada Birdathon. It's easy to participate in and helps raise thousands of dollars for bird conservation. Learn more at birdscanada.org/birdathon. Now let's get to the episode. From Birds Canada, this is The Warblers. This is The Wake Up Call, a special podcast series from The Warblers by Birds Canada. I'm Andrea Gress. Join me as I speak with experts about our most threatened bird species, why these species are at risk, and what conservation actions are being taken. And finally, what we can all do to help. Welcome to another episode of The Warblers podcast. This is actually our 50th episode. It's been a really fun adventure with all of you, so I just wanted to take a moment to thank everyone who has been listening. Whether you're a longtime fan or you're just finding us now because you're really excited about burrowing owls, whatever brings you to us, really, really happy to have you along for the ride. And another huge thank you to everyone who has left a rating or a review, or they've reached out to us to share some feedback. All of your input really helps us out. If you're listening on Spotify, you can often leave some feedback just like in the episode description. You'll see an opportunity to like maybe respond to a poll or provide a little feedback on the episode. Fill that stuff out for us. We love hearing from you. We love getting your input. It's all appreciated. And of course, a huge, huge thank you to folks who have been inspired to donate to support bird conservation in Canada. It's huge, hugely appreciated. So thank you so, so much. Now, before we get started and bring our guest on today, I want to share a little audio clip from the field of our guest, Graham, just talking about how he got started this realm in this industry.
I like birds, but I was never like a bit, like I've never been, you know, a birder really or anything like that. I started as the intern in the conservation science department. 2016. Yeah. And then towards the end of that, they were hiring for a research associate position that was originally to sort of work on burrowing owls and also help kind of developing other projects and stuff a bit. And in the end, that first field season, I worked on burrowing owls and it was so much work that it kind of just took up all of my time. And this is all I've ever been doing since.
I personally really like that clip. I kind of relate to it. When I was fresh out of university, I had no idea I'd be working with birds. But an interest in wildlife conservation led me to piping plovers, which led me to Birds Canada, and the rest is kind of history. So our guest today is Graham Dixon McCallum. He is a population ecologist at the Wilder Institute. The Wilder Institute operates a one-of-a-kind conservation breeding and research facility in Canada dedicated to the return of endangered species to the wild. One of those species is our feature bird for today, the burrowing owl. So welcome to the podcast, Graham.
Hi, thank you.
Where are you joining us from today?
I'm at my office in Calgary at the Calgary Zoo.
Lovely. Is it safe to say that the burrowing owl is your favorite species?
Well, you know, you'd think that that would be the case given my job. And I absolutely love burrowing owls, and they're without question one of my favorite birds. But I'm originally from Nova Scotia and spent a bunch of time in BC, and I love the coast. And I mean, really trying to pick a favorite bird probably depends on my mood and the day, but overall, it's probably the osprey. But burrowing owls are...
The osprey. Okay. Yeah, they're pretty cool.
Yeah. Maybe the northern gannet, but still, burrowing owls are absolutely top 10 at least.
Top 10. Well, we've got a top 10 burrowing owl fan here today.
I mean, birds are really cool, so I don't know. It's
hard to choose.
Exactly. I agree.
Totally. Okay, so I think a lot of our listeners might have an idea of what a burrowing owl looks like. I've never seen one in the wild, but they pop up on social media all the time. They look super charismatic and adorable. But for folks who are less familiar, could you please describe what a burrowing owl looks like?
Absolutely. I mean, the first very striking thing about them, I suppose, is that they're a really small owl. They're only about, I don't know, maybe 25 or 30 centimeters tall. So that's, you know, maybe as tall as a tall travel mug or a water bottle, something like that. And on average, they weigh about as much as a hockey puck. So a pretty small bird. they're kind of brown and spotted on their back and on their head, and they're mostly white or whitish on their belly with some brown spots and kind of brown streaking down low on their bellies. And I think probably the most, or one of the most striking things, if you see a burrowing owl or get a really good view of one, maybe up close or through some binoculars or a spotting scope, is just the bright, bright, intense yellow of their eyes. They really have a very, very intense stare. And sometimes if you're lucky, you'll spot one down on the ground out in the prairie, and you'll see just the top of their head, a little brown spotty head with these two bright yellow eyes staring at you, which might be really intimidating if they weren't just ankle high off the ground. Another really cool thing about burrowing owls is they spend a lot of time on the ground, and they just have really long legs. So I think people might be surprised at kind of how much of that height is just their tall, skinny legs.
Just all in the leg. Yeah, very, very cool. Exactly. Is it true that the males are larger than the females?
They're pretty close in size, but generally for adults, females are a little bit larger.
Okay. So still classic raptor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right on. And where in Canada are they found?
You can find burrowing owls across the prairies, from far southwestern Manitoba, across southern Saskatchewan, and into southeastern Alberta. On the prairies, they're in that kind of flat, wide open grassland habitat. And there are also burrowing owls in the southern interior of BC.
Okay, excellent. And burrowing owls are pretty unique from other owl species. I mean, for one, you've mentioned how small they are. That's kind of unique. But what else makes them unique amongst owls?
Well, I mean, I think the most obvious one is, as their name suggests, they spend a lot of time in burrows underground. And Western burrowing owls, those ones that are found in Canada and throughout the Western United States, they don't dig burrows for themselves, but they nest in underground burrows and they seek refuge in those burrows. And so we'll find owl nests, you know, 2, 3, even 4 meters down a tunnel underground, which might seem like a really strange thing to do. Why would you go down a hole in the ground to lay eggs and nest? But burrowing owls are from that flat, wide open prairie, as I just mentioned, and it's a landscape without perches or trees, or at least historically wouldn't have had those things. And so if you want to find a good, safe space to lay some eggs, going down a hole in the ground makes an awful lot of sense. I think people probably will have an easy time imagining an owl nesting or roosting in a cavity in a tree. It's almost like a classic cartoon thing, an owl in a hole in a tree. And so burrowing owls do the same thing, but they just go down a hole in the ground. Another, I think, really cool thing about these owls, and probably my favorite thing about them, is, you know, watching them on the ground and how agile they are on the ground. I mentioned they have really long legs relative to their body size, and they're just really good at running and catching insects on the ground out in the prairie. And it's probably my favorite thing, watching them just scurry about on the ground and hop and catch a grasshopper or a beetle. And I don't know, they're just really funny to watch.
Right. It's a little bit different from how, say, a snowy owl would hear or see something down on the ground and they would dive at it. These guys are kind of running and grabbing, hey?
Yeah, absolutely. Burrowing owls definitely hunt from the wing as well, particularly when they're hunting small mammals and things like that. But they're equally very capable at eating and catching insects. Especially, they spend a lot of time in the daytime standing around the entrances of their burrows. And so if an insect happens by while they're standing around, they'll go for it.
Danger.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Is it true that they line their burrows with livestock manure?
Absolutely. Yeah. They bring all kinds of funny things into their burrows, but they'll take manure, or if you were somewhere like Grasslands National Park, I'm sure they'd use bison manure, and they'll line the entrances of their burrows for that. There's a few theories on why they do that, but one possibility is that they're doing it because, you know, it kind of helps prevent flooding of a nest burrow. So if you have something absorbent like manure lining the entrance, maybe that helps prevent, nest flooding.
Brilliant. I like that theory a lot. And they make the sound of rattlesnakes, right?
Young burrowing owls can make a sound, yeah, that's very similar to a rattlesnake. So it's sort of a hissing, rattling sound. Theory being that if a predator is trying to go after a brood of owlets, and they hear the sound of a rattlesnake down in that burrow, well, maybe you don't want to go there.
Mm-hmm. Totally. I think that's a really neat adaptation. Have you ever been tricked by them making a sound?
I can't say that I ever have, honestly. But I also really, really love snakes and spend a lot of time looking for and listening for snakes. And it does sound a lot like... Also, honestly, where I'm working, there's more burrowing owls than there are rattlesnakes.
Yeah.
It does sound like it, but it's a good mimic. But
cool. Yeah.
Usually I'm expecting there to be owls in the hole that I'm looking around, so... Yeah.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I just think it's a really neat little trick that they could play.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, more serious tone here. They are endangered. How many burrowing owls do we have in Canada? And if you could speak for their global population as well, that'd be great.
That's a good question. It's a tough one to answer. We don't really know in some ways. We have estimates. We know, I can say there were roughly around 3,000 pairs of burrowing owls across the Canadian prairies in the early 1990s, and they've declined by at least 90%. An estimate published by Environment Canada in 2015 suggested there were at minimum 270 adult burrowing owls nesting in Canada, but we don't have a really, really good concrete estimate of population size. They are also found throughout the Western United States and in Mexico. And it's really hard to speak in numbers, but they are listed as threatened in Mexico and vulnerable or at risk in almost all of the states in the U.S. where they're found. Burrowing owls are also found in South America. And fortunately, in South America, their populations are doing better, actually. I think in some cases where... portions of rainforest are being cut down, burrowing owls are actually able to expand their range into the newly created grasslands.
And what are the mechanisms that have caused their populations to disappear across the Canadian prairies?
A whole bunch of threats, really. The sort of loss of and changes to the habitat that they rely on. So they need a prairie landscape with burrows in it. Then in some cases, the mammals that dig the burrows, because the owls can't dig them themselves, end up being persecuted, and there's fewer badgers and those things out there. Also, all of those things that get built out on those prairie landscapes end up impacting burrowing owls, whether it's roads or power lines or even fences. The landscape wouldn't have had perches for predators historically before there were fences or power lines or oil and gas infrastructure or all kinds of things. And those vertical structures provide perching habitat for predators, and then those predators end up hunting burrowing owls. We also lose burrowing owls due to, vehicle collisions on roads and that kind of thing. Also, some of those vertical structures create habitat for different predators that wouldn't have historically been on the prairie, like, say, great horned owls. So they're nesting in abandoned houses or old oil and gas pump jacks. And then now you have new predators that burrowing owls, haven't had before. And then finally, climate change seems to be affecting them, particularly on migration. It seems like those really, really intense storms impact burrowing owls when they're migrating, which they go from Canada to Mexico each fall and back in the spring. And the frequency of really intense storms is increasing. And so with a higher frequency of intense storms, you're going to have more burrowing owls failing to survive migration.
Yeah, I mean, I work really closely with piping plovers, and I'm always thinking when there's a big hurricane in Florida, I'm always thinking about my birds and how they're doing.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I should be thinking about the humans too. Of course, I want them to do well. But I also think about the impact on our wildlife. All these storms are scary.
Yeah.
Very scary.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's the same when it's burrowing owl migration season. I'm watching the weather kind of throughout the Great Plains of the U.S. And, you'll hear, big news stories of snowstorms in Kansas or Texas. And I think, oh, no. Yeah.
How are my owls doing?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of heart achy. Yeah. So one really big project that is working to increase the numbers of the burrowing owl is, of course, the one that you work on at the Wilder Institute. Your team was kind enough to share some audio of you out in the field this summer, kind of searching for and banding owls. We're going to play a clip of that really shortly. But first, I was hoping you could set the scene a little bit, you know, like what time of day is it? Where are you?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. We're out on the prairies. In the case where this was recorded, we're kind of in southern central Alberta. So it's a really flat, wide open space for if anyone listening hasn't spent time on the prairies. First of all, I strongly encourage that you do. And it's just kind of like the biggest sky you can imagine. And we're out trapping burrowing owls that are, they're nesting in a burrow that's in a cattle pasture. In the recording, I think we're parked on the side of a back road. And we're trapping in, we're doing this work kind of in the evening. So we recorded this at this point, it was sometime between 9 PM and midnight. So it's dark. Yeah, I love being out on the prairies at night. It's a beautiful place to be.
It is kind of lovely. I totally agree. And what are you hoping to achieve with the work you're doing?
Right. So yeah, we had trapped some juvenile, or in this case, I think just one juvenile burrowing owl, and we're putting some bands on its legs. And so those bands allow us to identify each individual bird, just like bird banding programs throughout North America and the world. So the bird's getting a unique ID number. We're also using some feather measurements to figure out how old that owl is in days so that we can figure out whether or not it's the youngest or oldest or where it is in the age of its brood mates.
Perfect.
So yeah, I'm just putting a little aluminum band on its leg. And this band has a number that's unique to this bird now. And I'm just going to take a couple measurements of some feathers that'll help us estimate how old this bird is in days. So you can tell they're juvenile by their plumage. They still have a really kind of buffy, kind of tan-colored belly and breast, and a kind of tan stripe on their wing, and they're less spotty as well. There's at least one owl that we definitely didn't catch this time because it's standing out on the burrow looking at us.
And a follow-up question, are you applying color bands to the owls?
We are, yeah. We apply two bands to each owl. One is the federal Canadian Wildlife Service, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service band with a number unique to that bird. And then the other is an alphanumeric color band that makes it so that it's easier to read from a distance, say with binoculars or a spotting scope or sometimes a trail camera. It helps us, yeah, figure out which owl it is.
Those are great because then you don't have to capture the bird again. You can get a re-sighting from just an individual who sees them in a scope, right? Like gets a good camera of an owl. You can get that re-sighting info without having to catch them again.
Yeah, exactly. And the reason they still get both is because it's one letter and one number and a color, and there just aren't quite as many combinations. So we know that color and letter number combination is unique to a burrowing owl, but it may not be unique to kind of every bird in the world, let's say, whereas the other number leg band is. So they both serve different purposes. But as you say, yeah, exactly. The color bands are fantastic because it means you know which owl it is without having to touch them or even come in some cases within a few hundred meters of them.
That's perfect. That helps so much to understand how the success is going with a particular species or with the conservation work you're applying.
Right. Absolutely. And we use different colors as well for different, you know, capture locations or different cohorts. So all the owls related to the program that we manage, the color on their band is kind of a silver. In Alberta, when we trap burrowing owls, a juvenile owl, an owl we trap as a juvenile, gets a blue, and the owl we trap that's adult and male gets black, adult and female gets green. And they use different colors in Saskatchewan or Manitoba or BC, other areas throughout the range, so that even if you just saw a burrowing owl and a flash of color, you could tell at least a little bit about where that owl was banded before.
Super useful. Awesome. So I'm going to play another clip here shortly. Again, with this one, you're still in the field, you're handling a juvenile owl.
So can't tell if a juvenile burrowing owl is male or female just by looking at it. So to determine that, we'll take a blood sample and then use a lab technique called PCR to figure out if it has two copies of the same sex chromosome or two different ones. That'll tell if it's male or female. And we do that because as part of our Head Starting program, we want to have pairs of owls to release, male-female pairs. So we need to know if they're male or female, before we bring them into the zoo for Head Start.
So in that clip, you mentioned the Head Starting program. Could you tell us what that program is?
Our Head Starting program is working to help burrowing owls skip a period of really, really high mortality in the wild, which for them is their first winter of life. So we do that by holding the owls in human care over winter, bringing them in roughly July when they're close to fledging age in the wild, and then keeping them through the time when they would leave on migration, spend a winter in Mexico, and then return. And then we also, when we release them, we track their progress on release. And we do this because, as I mentioned, mortality is really, really high in that age cohort for burrowing owls. And so only about 6% of burrowing owls that leave a nest in Canada in July are surviving and returning the following spring. But by being a member of our program, it's, you know, closer to 100% are able to be released back into the Alberta prairies when otherwise would have been many, many fewer. Yeah.
Holy. How long has this program been running for?
The first owls were brought in the summer of 2016 and first releases in 2017. So, just about 7 years now.
Mm-hmm. And how many owls have you released in that time?
We released 119, and then we brought another 26 into care this summer for release next spring.
Wow. Okay. I picture them as like just little youths going off to boarding school for a few months.
Yeah, exactly. It's something kind of like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. You leave for 9 or 10 months and you come back a grown up and ready for the world, hopefully.
Ready for the world. Yeah. And are you kind of matchmaking these owls? Like when you release them, do you release them as pairs?
We do. Yeah, absolutely. We do some genetics to help inform how we pair them to ensure that we're pairing owls that aren't too closely related. And then we also pair them a bit based on where we captured them from. Males generally have slightly higher sight fidelity than females. So a male is more likely to come back to the nest where he fledged from in the year previous. Hmm. So we try and release males pretty close to where we found them. We release them, as you said, in male-female pairs. And we also use a small enclosure that we put over the artificial burrow that we build to release them into. And so the owls are in that enclosure to help ease their transition into the wild so they don't just get afraid and fly away immediately after we release them. Mm-hmm. And we'll keep those enclosures on until the female starts to lay eggs. And so we know they've paired up. And then we'll take the enclosure off and then they're out to explore the prairie as they want.
Right on. And are you pretty successful at pairing the owls together?
Overall, yeah. About 90% of the pairs that we release will actually pair up and lay eggs and initiate a clutch. Don't get it right all the time. Once in a while, there'll be a pair that the two of them just, they don't seem to like each other. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we're releasing them in areas where there are still some burrowing owls. So in some cases, when we release a pair that doesn't seem to be into each other, we'll take the enclosure off. And one or the other of that pair will end up finding a wild mate and nesting elsewhere.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, I was going to ask like what you're looking for in a release site. You mentioned that you're making the burrows yourselves. How do you know where to take them?
Well, we're fortunate with burrowing owls in that a lot of people have been studying them for a long time. So a graduate student by the name of Joy Stevens developed a habitat suitability index some years ago that we can use to help inform kind of step one of using really high quality habitat. And that has burrows, that are being dug by badgers or things for owls to use, has the right kind of soil type and vegetation types. We also are using areas where there are still some burrowing owls and have been burrowing owls recently. We also, of course, need to just have a relationship with the people that own or lease that land so that they're happy and okay with us coming out on their land and working on burrowing owls. And those relationships are tremendously important. Mm-hmm. And then we're also picking areas where, we think, maybe a predator might not too easily sneak up on the owls. We're putting them relatively far away from, a busy road, things mm-hmm. like that. We install the artificial burrows, which is gives a nest chamber and gives us access to the nest chamber and then has two tunnels, kind of a front door and a back door, as well as a constriction in the tunnel to help prevent badgers from being able to get into the nest chamber.
For sure. Yeah. It's really interesting. You mentioned earlier that, a decline in species like badgers results in there being fewer natural burrows for the owls, which is a harmful thing. But then on the flip side, badgers are a predator. It's kind of just a fascinating dynamic.
Yeah, they have a complicated relationship with badgers, that's for sure. Yeah, because without badgers, there'd be no burrowing owls, or not in, in the area where we work in Alberta anyway. Elsewhere in the range, other burrowing mammals can provide those burrows. But yeah, badgers also will eat them. So it's a tricky relationship.
It's complex. Nature is very complex.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's talk about kind of the threats and their survival a little bit more. Like you mentioned that first year is really, really rough for these burrowing owls. What kind of threats are we talking about? Like, where are they migrating to and why aren't we seeing them return?
Right. Yeah. Well, they generally are migrating from Canada to Mexico. And some collaborators other researchers have been studying burrowing owl migration patterns for years. In the early days, using regular kind of high frequency VHF radio telemetry, and they would put transmitters on birds, and then let the owls would leave on migration, and some biologists, you know, would then fly transects to try and pick up these owls down in the southern U.S. and in Mexico, and actually found some migrating to Mexico from Saskatchewan. And then more recent years, people are using satellite transmitters to track their migration. And it seems like they go to Mexico, but there isn't one little part of Mexico where owls from Canada go. Anyway, in terms of the threats, you know, it's that people are still working on that, but it's the things I mentioned before. You know, intense storms impact them when they're migrating, and an intense storm comes through, we lose owls. Additionally, places where they would be stopping, you know, they're not able to fly from Alberta to Mexico in one shot. So they have to stop and seems recuperate a little bit along the way, and they need burrows to roost in at those times. And so it seems like very likely that as burrowing mammals are persecuted throughout the Great Plains, that means that there are fewer spots for burrowing owls to stop along the way. There's a time when there would have been, for example, prairie dog colonies throughout the Western U.S. that aren't there anymore. And so burrowing owls would have had a lot of burrows to encounter on their way south. Mm-hmm. They don't have now.
What do you mean when you say that they're persecuted?
Well, I think it's people have concerns about there being burrowing mammals on their land. And so there are places where, you know, people will shoot or poison, you know, prairie dogs and ground squirrels and badgers because they don't want them.
Oh, yeah, that's tough. And yeah, it does seem like burrowing owls would be a great advocate for just high quality ranch land and you know, good sustainable cattle operations, right? Because it helps to create that grassland habitat.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the ranchers that we work with are really, really good stewards of their land. Yeah, I think people love having burrowing owls on their land. And they're also in certain areas tolerant of having burrowing mammals on their land. And certainly the ranchers that we work with are as well. But it's an ongoing challenge, I guess. We all need to kind of work together to figure out solutions to protect the habitat for the mammals that rely on burrows and for those mammals themselves, and also see people's concerns, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it does seem like burrowing owls are a nice indicator that you've got a healthy grassland ecosystem, and those are invaluable and very, very much under threat as grasslands are converted to other forms of crops and being paved over for city developments and all kinds of things. So, I mean, if you've got a burrowing owl, that's an exciting thing. That's a really awesome thing to have.
Yeah, absolutely. It is. One of the cool things about burrowing owls as well is they're surprisingly adaptable. And that's one of the things that's so vexing about their declines, particularly in Canada, because there's places in the U.S., you know, around Phoenix, where there's burrowing owls that live in the city practically. They nest in people's lawns or they'll build their burrows in a culvert. And similarly in South America. And so, you know, studies trying to look at whether or not burrowing owls are impacted by oil and gas development or by agricultural development, it finds burrowing owls continue to use areas even after they get developed. I don't know, it's complicated and we don't fully understand. And that's one of the really big challenges for their conservation.
I guess some big questions there are like, is their success rate as good in some of these new areas that they're having to adapt to, or are they being less successful? And you might not have those answers yet.
Yeah, exactly. And not entirely no, but in some of them, it seems like they are, but then they're not returning. So
right.
It's complicated.
It's a lot. Migratory birds are tough. Oh, yeah. There's so many factors.
Exactly.
Oh my. Okay. So obviously the Head Starting program is helping to boost some numbers and success rates. Could you speak to some other work that's happening throughout Canada to help these birds?
Yeah, I'd love to. We're fortunate in that there are a pretty good group of people working on burrowing owls. There's the program in Manitoba called the Manitoba Burrowing Owl Recovery Program that's using a combination of captive breeding and some similar head starting to us to try and boost the population in that far southwest corner there. In Saskatchewan, there's a Saskatchewan Burrowing Owl Interpretive Center in Moose Jaw where people can go and see burrowing owls and learn about them. There's also a program called Operation Burrowing Owl run by Nature Saskatchewan that engages landowners to report the owls that are on their land. So at least they have a rough count of the number of burrowing owls on various landowner properties. And they've been doing that for decades and just kind of engaging people to think about burrowing owls and burrowing owl conservation. Grasslands National Park and Parks Canada are monitoring burrowing owls found in that park. There's an organization, community organization in Alberta called Operation Grassland Community. And then there's a Burrowing Owl Conservation Society of British Columbia that's working to restore burrowing owls in the southern interior. So we're in good company. And there's others doing research as well through the federal government and associated with the University of Alberta and Royal Saskatchewan Museum.
Sounds like there's a ton of good work happening. That's really exciting to hear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, agreed.
Awesome. I had no idea that you could go see them in Moose Jaw. I've been through Moose Jaw so many times in my life. I didn't know that I just needed to do a little pit stop and go see some burrowing owls.
Yeah, you should. Next time you should stop. I haven't made it there. I've never been to Moose Jaw myself, mm-hmm. but certainly next time or whenever I'm there, I'll absolutely.
That's a pretty awesome tourism draw for the prairies. Get to Saskatchewan, folks.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And Grasslands is just a phenomenal national park.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, definitely. So how could listeners help burrowing owls?
Well, speaking of driving across the prairies, if you're driving, particularly at night, especially in July on back roads, keep an eye out for burrowing owls. And ideally slow down if you're in areas where you think there might be burrowing owls, and not just owls, but really any wildlife. Driving on back roads and watching for wildlife is a really simple little thing that everybody can do to help prevent vehicle strikes of all species. I think another thing, you know, we talked a little bit about how livestock producers are often end up becoming stewards for the land that where we find burrowing owls. So I think doing everything we can to try and support landowners who act as good stewards for burrowing owls and all kinds of species at risk. It can be tricky making a living producing food. And so the more that we can do to help people be able to both make a living and remain stewards for wildlife, I think, you know, that helps.
Mm-hmm. Supporting the sustainable farming operations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Farming and ranching. Yeah, definitely.
For sure. That's excellent. And of course, we'll put a link in our episode description to all those really good groups and to the Wilder Institute that, you know, so that people can dig in and learn a little bit more about the organizations that are local to them. Thank you so much. I think this has been a really fascinating episode. I love these little guys.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, so yeah, I'm really glad for having the opportunity, and it's always nice to be able to talk about these little birds. So yeah, thank you.
Before we wrap up, I want to mention another really great way to help owls is by giving them space. I mentioned in this episode how charming burrowing owls are and how their captivating photos are all over the internet. And I know it can be mighty tempting to try and capture a photo of an owl when you have the opportunity, but we have to be aware that our presence can be very stressful for these birds. In the episode description, I've linked to some pointers for how you can observe owls and other vulnerable species without causing them unnecessary stress. Graham also wanted to give a shout out to all the organizations that partner with the Wilder Institute, Alberta Environment and Protected Areas, and the Canadian Wildlife Service. And a special thank you to CFB Suffield and other landowners who manage the properties where they release and study owls. It takes a team. Also, folks, check out those great organizations that Graham mentioned who are doing good work for burrowing owls across Canada. I'm sure they'd appreciate a like or a follow on their social media, or better yet, a small donation to support their efforts. Till next time, folks, get out and get birding. The Warblers is a podcast of Birds Canada. Our goal is to bring you the information you need to discover, enjoy, and protect birds. If you like what you hear, please subscribe, leave a review, and share this podcast with everyone you know. Birds Canada relies on the support of donors like you. Visit birdscanada.org/warblerspodcast to make a donation today. The Warblers is produced by Jody Allaire, Kate Dogleash, Chris Koo, and Andrea Gress, with music by Jose Mora and art by Alex Nickel. Until next time, keep birding.